I do these meetups literally everywhere, the 200 cities around the world. And so originally I did it just to help people. So I had usually between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m. an hour to help people, and they meet me in a hotel lobby. And then this stuff started happening, but it only happens. I thought it was just to help others. What it really has allowed me to do is not only get great content with you, that you're welcome to, by the way, if you want it, but two, to learn around the world what people are listening for. So as much as I get on stages and every once in a while I'll get a few questions, for me, this is the real valuable time, because we all get to learn worldwide what human nature is experiencing according to the circumstances that we all have, which vary. Those circumstances vary, but we can learn the most from the collective consciousness more than what you think your own individual experience is. And so it's a way to elevate yourself by learning this more collective. And so I'll take your questions and formulate them according, not just to your question and my personal knowledge, but this consciousness that's collected through being in 200 cities, doing all the things that I do, and I'll channel that, if you know what that means, so that we can all keep elevating our awareness to make things easier. Yep. Because the more, right, the less this-ease, the more ease, the happier and longer you're going to live this human experience. It's not just living a long time. I know a lot of people are on the longevity side of things for your health, but I think a lot of them are missing the point that if you're at dis-ease for 110 years, I couldn't think of anything worse.
Right.
And I'm not just talking about physical dis-ease. Like, imagine if you're emotionally expensive every day for 100, you know, I want to live to over 100, 111 years. I actually, this is the first year coming into 2025 on every single one of my financial documents, I actually have an emotional expense on like my.
And what does that look like?
It's literally a number that's derived by how much time I'm spent in disease. So I'm worried about you as a friend.
Okay.
Worry is an emotional disease.
Got it.
And
right.
I'm like, shit, that just cost me $1,200.
And how is it costing you $1,200?
Because if I'm spending, it's actually exponential in its nature. If I'm worried for 15 minutes and I charge $1,000 an hour, then I can actually have a straight mathematical equation of what that expense is. Just like if I'm buying an Uber, I can take and say that was $135.
Got it.
And it makes a huge difference, because you start looking at your business differently, your family differently, your employees differently, your travel differently, the bed you sleep in differently. And it also elevates your awareness to what I'm doing to interfere with my best self, my highest self. And so the more we elevate that, so, you know, my accountant, I actually have it in QuickBooks, and he comes up with, look, you think you made this much money? This is how much you, because it includes opportunity costs, right? Because when we're interfering with ourselves, I'm missing deals. I'm not closing deals. And so this year, I'm going to really be helping people with the emotional expense as a quantitative, actual line item in your accounting.
That's brilliant.
So, and there's a way I can formulate how much you make versus that, because some people may not even realize that the opportunity cost. So you might make $100,000 a year, but have an emotional expense of $1 million. Because if I can get rid of or dissipate, minimize the distance or resistance, I'll double the amount of money you make in a year. Not because I've taught you anything to do. It's understanding the amount of time that you're spending not doing what you're already doing.
So practicing detachment, right, from other people's drama. Right.
Yeah. Or other things drama.
Yeah. Other things drama.
Because people, right? Because you start working on, I'm worried about this. I'm offended by this. You know, maybe it's TikTok. I've had some of my clients see the emotional expense of not just the time they spend on TikTok, but the emotional a quantitative measurement. This is how much TikTok's free. Bullshit. I think is one of the most expensive things you can have.
Wow.
Now, you can make it differently if you change the content that you watch on TikTok, if it's aligned with the meaning that you want to give and the divine direction you want to be in. But most people don't, right? Because it's just feeding you disease. And I'm not some moral bullshitter, you know, oh, it's, I don't think that shit's funny. But no, I think that shit's funny, right? And I participate in it, but I understand the economics of the emotional expense of putting my mind, body, and soul into something that's interfering with my better self. And I'm okay spending time, but I want to know the expense of it.
Because there's always a learning. There's a lesson.
Correct. Putting it into a context of human experience. All right. This only works if you ask more questions, like I said. So, yes, sir.
So, in your talk...
Nick, do we have a mic, a recorder mic? Okay, but go ahead.
So, you mentioned specifically gratitude and forgiveness.
Yes.
And, you know, when you study spirituality, you said that you elevated your awareness in order for that to be something. So, being aware of your consciousness that's observing how you think, you know, how you're
smart. Yeah. Process, the meaning.
How are you going about it?
Yeah. So,
that awareness.
So how am I going about elevating my awareness to actually giving conscious thought to what I may be in an unconscious or subconscious way, giving meaning to something, right? So how am I analyzing all this shit, with a conscious? So I'm very pragmatic. One of the things I've learned about myself is I put context around infinite. So I put man-made constructs around infinite. And so I give people a framework in which to answer a question like that. So for me, when I'm stepping outside of myself and saying, okay, this is interfering with my higher self, or I'm giving conscious thought to a subconscious or infinite type of thought process. So I just use a formula, a framework to do so. So for me, I know that I give meaning to the past, and the past is all that I know. And you can practice, like if you study the Course in Miracles, you can practice actually changing the way you look at a coffee cup. Because the meaning you give a coffee cup is only derived from your past. And you can change your meaning of that past. And so meaning is the conscious, pragmatic framework, meaning to what you see through the door, out the window, all around you. What you see, meaning is the framework in which you give it. And so the more I try to align the meaning of what I'm seeing into the divine direction of what I want to become, into a divine direction of where I want to be or better. And so we don't realize how much we limit ourselves because of the past and the meaning that we give the past. See, we're not in search of life's meaning. It's we're applying the meaning we give our past to our life, which then doesn't make us feel like we're alive. And that's truly the objective of the human experience is to what? Experience being human. In other words, feel alive.
Feel your feelings.
Yeah, feel alive. That's what we do. And so when you have these pragmatic ways, and I think I'm at a big advantage because I started my life in a very pragmatic way, very non-spiritual way, very scarce way, make a lot of money, pay for everything to be happy. Because if I started off on the journey like, you may have, you can't go back. You would die if you had to suffer or learn the lessons I learned in the pragmatic world, because I just didn't know any better. So we have to have different ways, systems in order to create context in our life. Well, I'm sure.
I spent 2 decades learning, but that's okay.
But a lot of people get on their spiritual journey really early and then they wonder why they can't understand the pragmatic side. That's why a lot of spiritual people are broke.
How did you, when you were going to work for somebody else to learn, how did you manage that spiritual?
That's a great question.
Yeah. When you're a learner, right? I'm a learner as well. When you're trying to get the knowledge that you need from somebody more experienced from you, how did you manage that internally? And, you know, basically say, I have to go through this phase in my life to learn. And then how did you put to the side or know what to put to the side in order to gain those skills from this other person or organization?
Yeah. So when I started, I did.
You did not?
I did not. I protected myself with my ego and said that I don't need to know. I already know. I'm better than them. I'm smarter than them. And then humility, I started realizing, holy shit, life's about lessons. The lessons keep on coming until I learn them. They will repeat themselves until I learn them. And I started to live life long enough to see patterns.
Yeah. Right.
And then I started making different choices. So when I decided, hey, this is a good idea, then I had to decide at what level am I going to pimp myself out? And at what level am I going to be myself? Because I think it's unrealistic for people, and you'll hear them all the time, just live your dream, you know, and it confuses the shit out of a 24-year-old. I got a 25-year-old, 23-year-old, and a 20-year-old. And it's like, Dad, I want to be just like you. I want to do what I want, when I want, with who I want, for as long as I want. I'm like, good luck with that. Because it takes a long time. You got to start somewhere. And, you know, I repeat to people all the time, I don't love what I do. I have learned to love what I didn't like or didn't love, what other people didn't like. Or I made a lot of money doing shit that most people wouldn't want to do every day. And I did it 7 days a week.
So right now I'm missing a day of work to learn from. I'm being employed by this
so
person
first of all,
to learn.
We don't call it work anymore. Everyone, listen to me. You have activity that you get paid for and activity you don't get paid for. If it, trust me, raising three daughters, that's fucking work. So I had to change it to activity I don't get paid for.
That's a distinction.
This shit, I get paid for. Not work. Nope. This activity I get paid for.
Activities. I'm missing activities that I get paid for.
Yeah, that's important.
To
be here where you don't get paid.
To be here where I don't get paid, potentially at risk
for
those activities. But it's like, what is this the right choice? Like I need to learn from these people that I'm potentially missing out on by being here. So should I just suck it up?
No. Wait, hold on 1 second. Yeah, I apologize. We're not going to get through it. So time is really important.
Right.
So we talked about non-negotiable and negotiable time. So what we like to do is live in a zero-sum game. I'm doing this today, so none of this. I'm doing activity I don't get paid for. I'm going on vacation to Tulum with my family. Therefore, I cannot have any activity that I get paid for. Because I'm in Tulum with my family, even though those mofos are sleeping until 10 or 11 and I wake up at 3 a.m. So I sit there creating interference in my life thinking, I can't make money. This is vacation. Your issue right now is you went about planning the day the wrong way.
100%.
And so
100%.
And all of you, I can teach you this time, intentional, non-negotiable versus negotiable time. This is important to be here, but you could have made more money being here today than being at the office.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
And my phone broke. And I still outdid everybody.
It's fixed.
It's fixed now. Yeah.
I'm 10-4.
Okay, so you said, I have no idea, but I'll use it.
It doesn't amplify. It's just...
Yeah, and I'll repeat the question for you guys.
We're always looking for what people are listening.
I could speak loud.
Yeah.
Good.
So you just recently said that spiritual people are often poor. I happen to be super spiritual and love that about myself. And I definitely use it as a superpower in my business. But I also am learning that I don't fully understand the grounded game of money that they were talking about earlier. So how do I take my superpower, spirituality, ability to connect and draw in exactly what I want in my life with making multi-millions of dollars?
Right. So first of all, most people who make multi-millions of dollars and billions of dollars are very spiritual.
Yeah.
Most people that are spiritual, the majority of them don't know how to make money. But the ones that know how to make money and are spiritual make a lot of fucking money. Because so you have a quality that most people don't have. And it's the quality that is necessary in order to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, have a lot of fun. And so what you have to realize is like your spirituality is a practice. So is making money.
Yep.
And so if you want to get better, there's two things to do. If you want to get better at anything you want to do, I want to get better at sleep. So what did I do? I, number one, got someone who sits in a situation that I wanted to be in, a mentor. She's the doctor for the MLB and the NFL, leading sleep doctor in the world. And I practice what...
Sleep apnea doctor, sleep apnea.
And other things. Right. She's also from India, so she has some other... things that she knows, Western and Eastern doctor.
Right.
So, but yes. But think about this. If I want to be the greatest golfer in the world, right, I'm not going to go to Tiger Woods, even though he sits in a situation, because he's not the best teacher of golf.
Journeyman.
That's why he has a teacher of golf. So I will go to the best teacher of golf, and then I will practice like Tiger Woods. What I learned from the best teacher of golf, right? And so you need to come to people like me about money and then practice it. And know that
practice.
Right. And progress is only determined by behavior. Behavior is good if it's aligned with what you want to be or better, or it's bad if it's interfering with what you want to be or better. And it's determined by what you want to become, not what other people are telling you on those stages or here, not what's missing and not what you don't have. And so there is a pragmatic framework of saying, I need to be very aware of my behavior. That's why I create a minimum amount of time, really, of non-negotiable behavior, because I know 90% of the outcomes in my life, 90% of the acceleration, aggregation, and compounding in my life, in the direction, divine direction I want to be in, is from the 7 hours of sleep, which doesn't take any effort at all, and the 3 hours of intentional, non-negotiable behavior. Reminding you, non-negotiable behavior is non-circumstantial behavior. Doesn't matter what the circumstances of the day, you're going to do it no matter what, 7 days a week, even if people are like, oh, you never relax, you don't go off the grid, you went on vacation with your family, and you spent that much time doing, yeah, but they were sleeping. Right. I slept for 7 hours when they were sleeping. And then I had 3 hours of non-negotiable, which includes, by the way, my health for an hour, which you should take care of every day, regardless of activity you get paid for. So there is a constructive way in a constructive human experience. Remember, human experience is defined by the 24 hours of the day. It's the only thing we share. Everything else is circumstantial, and it is emotional and thoughtful in its process. It's different. You experience everything different than me, except for one thing. If I tell you right now, in 10 minutes, meet me at the Aspire sign, and I tell the whole world, be there in 10 minutes, we're all going to be there at the same time. If I tell you, hey, feel my speech the way that I feel my speech, or eat this food and feel what it, you know, experience this like I'm experiencing, there's no effing way, but we all be there in 10 minutes. So that's why I use time, infinite time and constructive man-made time, to help people reconcile an infinite journey they're on with a finite journey of the human experience, which is determined by one guarantee in life for everyone. You are guaranteed 24 hours a day, except for the last day of your life, you're going to be cheated. Seconds, minutes, and hours. All of us, we signed for the same deal. You know, I can imagine the lawyer up at God, right? You want into to the human experience? Yeah, here's the deal. I'm going to give you 24 hours every day, and the last day I'm going to cheat you. Otherwise, when you wake up, you're guaranteed this amount of time to do whatever the fuck you want. And so that's why I also simplify things. This is really important. I simplify things for people when I work. There's four things that if you want to spend non-negotiable time, think about this. What you need to stay alive, to not be cheated early. What do we need? One, air.
Water.
If you, right? So, but if you don't breathe, you don't breathe, you're dead. So I have a breathing coach. There's billions of dollars of people that learn about how to breathe. Smart, right? Two, you said what?
Water.
Water. Right. You don't drink, you're fucked. You're dead. So I'm very intentional about what I drink. Because
80% of our body's water.
And how I use the energetic conduit of water in me to be a conduit, a medium to channel the truth, even when I sleep. I am more concerned about how I'm hydrated while I'm sleeping, because that's when I'm accessing the most information without the ego or the human experience in the way. The other one, food, right? You don't eat eventually. So I'm very intentional about my nutrition, my energy. And then what's that fourth one if you don't do? Anyone know? The one most people ignore, the one, right? Most people go to bed at night and wake up more tired. The guy that was driving me today is like, dude, I just woke up. I'm so tired. I'm like, you're an idiot. Like, if we went to go
sleep
eat.
Apnea. Person has sleep apnea.
Right. He does.
That's oxygen.
Right. But you shouldn't be recovering and wake up more tired. You're doing something wrong. If we all went out to eat, which I'm inviting all of you to come eat with me tonight, the VIP dinner. If we all eat, right? Go see Nick. But if we all ate,
Nick,
right?
Friend of mine.
He's a good friend of mine. Anyway, think about this. Imagine taking a whole bunch of friends for my birthday to dinner, and then 3.5 hours, 5 different, you know, courses. And then everybody's leaving the dinner is like, dude, I'm so hungry. I would think there was something wrong with the food.
You didn't eat properly.
I'm not eating right.
You were doing a job interview.
So why is it, right? But why is it that billions of people, billions with a B, wake up every morning tired? That doesn't make sense. It's like, finish a meal hungry? That doesn't make sense. So
they neglected the health. And.
But think about it. We're wasting so much time interfering with what we actually are and want to become. Next question.
I was paying to Kevin O'Leary's presentation, and specifically the section that he was focusing on, knowing how to negotiate and, you know, knowing all your margins and everything that you need to know in order to get a good deal, basically.
Uh-huh.
what if there was a product that was as transformative as the invention of computers? How would you negotiate for that?
Yeah. So first of all, Kevin has a different perspective in negotiation than I do because he's working in a zero sum game. So I'm a fantastic negotiator. I work for Lee Steinberg, right? He wrote the book on and so understanding negotiation is our first thing. What is your idea of negotiating? Is negotiating for you a zero sum game where you're going to win and they're going to lose? Or is it
is
a
that
philosophy
what you do?
In abundance of there's more than enough of everything for everyone? And my job is to do a few things. One, to understand the value to the audience in which I'm communicating this innovation or invention or business to. And the way that we do that is we have to actually be more interested than interesting. See, I can negotiate and sell like that if I'm interesting. I can oversell you, back and sell you, lie to you, manipulate you, cheat you, deny you, outwit you, understanding situation knowledge in the long term, back end selling. I can do all that. But instead, I like to be more interested than interesting. I want to know, what are you doing today as a person, a company, an organization, a country? What are you doing today? And then find out what's working, what's not working, what you like and what you don't like. And then take responsibility for articulating the value of, would it help you if I did this? Would it help you if I did this? Would it help you? And if it doesn't resonate or align to a complete way that I can articulate a quantitative value to exceed what I'm asking for, then all I need to do is say, hey, do you know anyone that could help me? Because everyone's
okay. Expectations of the person you're negotiating with, right?
Of course.
And lowball though, yeah.
In the long run, and this is true about Shark Tank, right? I've been blessed, right, to be offered a judge. Guest judge. And I have elevator pitch with Entrepreneur. And it's all scarce. Because in the end, right, in the end, the truth vibrates the fastest. So if you're scarce, how many of those companies actually thrive?
And you're saying it's scarce? I wasn't
kidding. Scarce, yeah. Because they're negotiating. I'm not enough.
Right, yeah.
Right, so I got to do this.
And some percentage are successful.
Of course. But when you narrow down that, okay, and I'll talk about my show, not Shark Tank, because they're all about the same Dragon's Den elevator pitch, which is why I started 2-Minute Drill. So it's pitch only. You don't even need a company. Just teach people how to pitch. But here's the problem, even with my show. Okay, here you have 100 companies. You decide to fund 30 at a certain percentage negotiation. Out of that, maybe 5% actually get funded, and none of them get funded at the percentage that was first offered. Right? Because why? Because one grand lesson in life, every decision, every agreement that is made in life, at the instant it's made, whenever you make a decision, an agreement, implied, written, with consideration, time, emotion, and value changes. And so my perspective where you're at is, one, meet people at their feet, find out what they like, what they don't like, what works, what they don't work, and two, apply a process that allows you to stay aligned, which I call a go, no-go plan, to stay aligned with the changing time, emotion, and value after we've come to a decision and agreement, or I've made a decision or an agreement with myself or others. I'm already preparing for the one thing I know to be true, which is time, emotion, and value are going to change.
Love it.
And so the majority of my time in any interaction with people is, how can I manage and develop the expectation after we agree? Because the only certainty I know is time, emotion, and value are going to change after we agree. Either I agree with myself, meaning I make a decision for the day, or I agree with someone else with verbal, written, implied consideration of something.
Yeah.
That's why all of my agreements are non-binding. So if any of you want to come to my Friday trainings, or I have a group, a private networking group on Mondays with one-on-one access, is virtually, or one-on-one for me, the only thing I do that's different, and Daryl's been with me for years, I guarantee it. Sam works with me. I'm a profit center. So a year from now, you tell me, Dave, that was the worst $500 I've ever spent to be in your private networking group. Or Dave, I don't like your hair anymore. Take your goddamn money back. Because I don't want to do it. And the only way I can feel good about being abundant is if I am of value to you. So
making changes which are needed.
Yeah, quantitative, not the Tony Robbins, I'm going to make you feel good. I can make everybody feel good. Yeah, you don't need that shit. I want you to say, from being in your private networking group, I made $5,000 and it cost me $500. I want to be in next year.
$5 million.
Yeah, $5 million.
Like, can we go with that?
Exactly.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So I have witnessed many people are letting their brain drive their decisions versus their heart drive the brain, you know.
Such a good point.
And, you know, I'd like to hear your opinion.
Yes. Good question.
What the impact is, mm-hmm. how people can retrain themselves.
Yeah. They're not mutually exclusive, number one.
Right.
Right. And so that's the first thing, is elevate someone's awareness of three things that are involved between the heart and the brain. So there's three things that I analyze. One is intelligence. So part of heart-brain relationship is called intelligence. Intelligence can come from a variety of different places. And so I analyze, where is the best resource, repository of intelligence that's aligned with this opportunity, option, touch of favor in my own divine direction. Two, heart and mind relationship as far as intuition goes. This is the one that really fucks up people, intuition. I'll tell you why. Intuition works only within the infinite time frame. So what happens is, you got the schmo at the craps table, and intuitively, he's like, heart eight. So he takes all his money and he puts it onto heart eight.
Balance to it. Yeah.
But he doesn't understand that an intuitive thought between the heart and the brain that processes thoughts, it's timeless. So intuition says to you, hey, human being, pay attention. It doesn't say pay attention right now or 5 minutes from now or 10 minutes from now, because it doesn't know time. Intuition is on infinite time. Intelligence on man-made time. Right? We can say, according to the circumstances of the day and what time it is, this is the best source that I can get the intelligence I need to align with where I want to be or better in my divine direction, according to the circumstances of the 24 hours today. But intuition, it's an attention giver. Then you can prioritize with the intelligence of the day and the intuitive thought that you have, and then utilize the third form that needs to be analyzed, which is inspiration. Not motivation. Motivation is extremely valuable. Usually fear-based. It gets you up, gets you back up, gets you started, gets you back started. That's what most of these events are. Not this one. Yeah, this
is inspire with accomplishments, like you've done things in life.
You clear you, or my philosophy of inspiration is, I've managed to clear more of what I'm doing to interfere with in spirit, with the higher source.
Yes.
With the infinite.
I would like to ask, as a person, how you can deal when you are and you, how you deal personally and business and personally when you felt very, very down.
Yeah.
So how you
emotionally,
yeah.
emotionally and I say strategic yeah. that you was using, and you are in the point by zero, and what path you need to follow?
Yeah. So the question is, when you feel down, personally or professionally, really down, like your basement has a basement.
Not a small basement. Within a basement.
What do we do? How do I deal with that? So once again, I'm always working within certainty. So there's two certainties, right? 24 hours a day is a man-made construct. It's a certainty. Once again, if I want to meet all you 10 minutes over there, it's a certainty when we're all meeting. The other certainties lie within me. And so when I feel down, it's a reaction to what I'm afraid of. So I'm either misaligning the meaning I'm giving my past, or I'm limiting my own self-image or my imagination. So that's creating interference, which manifests itself as feeling down, emotionally interfering. Because in essence, if I was not interfering with who I am, right? I am happy. I am healthy. I am wealthy. I am worthy. What am I doing to interfere with it? If I'm not interfering with it, then I am part of an omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing source of light, love, protection, and perfection. Now, that's the human experience is interfering with that, and it's learning how we're interfering with that. So I use time. So whenever I feel down, I stop. So remember, logic can't overcome emotion. That's why action can change emotion, and so can stopping as an action. Yep. But stopping first.
Yeah.
Because praying again, you can create resistance if you don't get to center. Because you're now accelerating in the wrong direction. Even though you're praying, you're trying to overcome, outdo the darkness in that way. So the first step is stop. Then it's breathe and remind, remember, and recollect, which is part of remind. I call it remind, remember, and recollect who you are and what you're part of. So if I'm down, and I used to take days, weeks, months, and years to do this. Mm-hmm. Now it takes minutes and moments. Because why? It's a practice. And I got better at it. And so the minute I feel down, this morning, I had a lot of stuff going on. My phone was not receiving calls. And then I did it while I worked out. I called, the carrier, spent an hour and 15 minutes in my workout with my earphones in. And then it didn't work. And so I handed it off to him. And then I couldn't talk to my son, which I have a minimum for my son of 30 minutes a day that I spend with my son, no matter where I am. And I'm getting behind on that. And he has school. And all of a sudden I said, whoa. This is not going to be a good day if I keep accelerating in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. Breathe, drop, remind, remember, recollect. And all of a sudden, the phone started working with God or your source. Yeah.
Excellent.
Stop, drop, and roll.
But you always add, resume. You
may stop. Roll, roll.
Hydrate, whatever.
Roll. Roll and take this.
How do you eat an elephant?
One bite.
Bite at a time.
Always keep taking it.
Yeah, it's not. So basically, what your mind, body, and soul's on fire when you're feeling down. When you're on fire, you stop, you drop, and then you roll, resume.
Yeah.
In a divine. Okay. Yeah.
Excellent. Armando Ortega, Zero Energy Developments. We're building the house of the future.
Nice.
And I'm transitioning from a whole different career into raising capital with other partners. They're in construction. I'm raising capital. What advice do you have that's applicable today for raising capital as things are changing?
Well, first of all, the easiest way to raise capital is to practice articulating the quantitative value according to the credibility of the opportunity, the emotional connection, and the impact it's going to have. Using your capability as an arsenal to infuse value into credibility, emotional attachment, impact of your ability, no one else's, to articulate that value, and then ask for help for people who have more people for you to talk to. One of the things that I teach people is a skill set that wasn't as important when I was young as it is today. I still think it's the most important thing in sales, and that's the ability to get people to call you back. See, it would take me a month to get in touch with 1,000 people when I was young.
Discuss their concerns, yeah.
Now, I can get in touch with 1,000 people in 0.2 seconds. It's a matter of how good am I at getting back. Why is that important? So if we're unlimited in the amount of people we can reach out to, which we are today, then why is it important to be really good at getting people to get back to you? Because if I can double the amount of people that get back to me, I literally will have twice as many opportunities mathematically. And I get more practice. I get more practice. So I'm better. So I'll increase the percentage as well. So it has a duplicative benefit of learning how to get people to get back to me. So how am I getting people to do that? Well, number one, I look at the four ways in which I can best communicate to an incredible size, scope, and scale of an audience and a community. One, in person. How many other guys do you see at my stature doing what I do in person? Two, on the phone. Three, via email. And four, media, traditional and social. So I have different strategies of getting people to get back to me in person. Anybody that was up at the Diamond Lunch, how many people stand on a stage and literally get people to get back to you by saying, here's my cell phone and here's my email. Here's my email, here's my cell phone, here's my email. Why? Because I want you to get back to me because I have a strategy of how I communicate with people in person. And so I'm very intentional.
You make the connection.
And I ask for help. So I have the leading guy in cold outmail, a cold email, and warm email. I have the leading guy in funnels. And I paid a lot of dummy tax to get those people.
What does dummy tax mean?
Yeah, what's
that means?
Tax?
I had to learn who the right people are. I'm a dummy. Dummy tax is I made a mistake. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, he has a question.
Yeah.
Even my husband.
Thank you. Good.
Following up on this, my question is regarding authenticity and building a a company founded on that. First of all, I really appreciated what you said about TikTok, where yes, there's an audience there. However, the emotional tax on you might not be, you know, worth it. So I really appreciated that. The question is, how do you, let's say on Instagram, where we're building a following and the business is on self-love and relationships and attracting your, you know, getting closer to yourself. So it's very, I guess, altruistic in a sense, in terms of asking or having a call to action where at the end, like, let's say of a challenge, there's an upsell where you're going to be charging for this. How do you bridge that gap between being authentic and charging money for something where?
So I had a big problem with that too. I sat with Dean Graziosi and Ed Mylett one night. And I said, I have a problem doing that. That's not to who I am. So what I learned is what I taught today on the upstairs is the infinite loop of giving. That my problem wasn't asking for money. My problem was having faith that I was providing more value than I was asking for. Because if I really believe, and that's why I guarantee everything, because it's that, what if I'm wrong? So it's not that I don't believe sometimes. It's like, shit, what if I'm wrong? I take this guy's 10 grand and I'm wrong. It's not for him, or he's not ready. He's not willing to. Then you get into this blame, shame, and justification thing between the two of you. Well, he didn't do this and you didn't. Fuck that. Everything I do is just fucking guaranteed. So it takes me out of the realm of.
Meeting in 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's just guaranteed. So if I can't make, forget the emotional subjective value that I can bring you. If I'm not a profit center for you, and then as far as being at my essence, I'm one of the greatest content captures that I know. I'm not a content creator. I hire people to create content from what I capture of me. And I know who I am. My essence is my skills, my knowledge of who and what, and my desire. And I've learned to capture that when I'm in person, on the phone, via email. I capture my essence because I take inventory of my skills, knowledge, and desire. I align it with what's doing well, what's stable, and what I think is going to be doing well. And then I derive value by meeting people where they're at, understanding what's working, what's not working, what they like, what they don't like, knowing that value is only derived by what? Giving people more of what they like or taking away what they don't like, giving them what's working more or taking away what's not working. Yep. That's quantitative value. So when I'm talking to people at my essence, my only concern is capturing my essence. So if I say something, misspeak, energetically, I'm thinking about my mom who's in hospice, and energetically, I'm not where I want to be, even though the words are right, but I'm watching it. I'm like, nah, just delete that. That's not at my essence. That's not capturing who I am and what I want to become. It's capturing some interference. And remember, in the intuitive world of infinite time, a lot of times our intuition also screws up business deals because we meet with someone and there's something that doesn't feel right, but it's not what you think doesn't feel right. Because the guy just left his mom in hospice and he has the greatest opportunity for you, but his energy's off. And then you're like, I can't trust that guy because his energy's off. No, you probably could trust him more because he cares more about his mom than he does the business deal. And that's where people, when you were talking about the mind and the heart, you got to realize that infinite time exists in the intuition, and you have to use intelligence in order to figure out the timing of the intuition. Not the intuition itself. Intuition is like reaction to fear. It's instant and obvious. It's easier to know when you're angry, upset, separate and fear, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, whatever feelings it is that need to be right, need to, whatever it is, you can figure that out fast. But it's the timing that's difficult.
Well, divine timing.
Divine timing is infinite, the same as intuition. Yeah. Correct. But not man-made construct. That's why I have negotiables, non-negotiables. That's why I put pragmatic frameworks around essence and authenticity. At least I have some sort of criteria. Another criteria that a lot of people like, relationships. So for me, there's three criteria I look at. One, what's the relativity of the relationship? Two, what's the association I have with the relationship? And then three, how much does the feeding and bleeding that exists in every relationship actually feeding me? Which is a different subtle nuance than people who, including me, used to say, if it feeds you, feed it. If it bleeds you, fire it. That's bullshit. You have to determine how much of the bleeding feeds you. So
the lesson.
Right. It's right. So like, for example, my mom right now is in hospice bleeding the crap out of me, but it's feeding me. It's draining me. But the bleeding, just like your kids bleed the shit out of you, but the bleeding is what feeds you.
Right.
So I use that nuance. So any relationship I have, I'm prioritizing the amount of time and intention I give to a relationship according to the relativity of the association and the feeding that occurs from the bleeding and feeding of the relationship. Therefore, I'm spending the most time with the people that elevate and prioritize in that analysis. Most people don't put a man-made constructive analysis framework around the infinite, including God. And so that's why I have non-negotiable behavior, negotiable behavior. Talk about this. Most people don't understand time in non-time and scheduled time. They think all time and man-made construct is equal. Just because we all can meet in 10 minutes from here around the world and everyone would be there in 10 minutes doesn't mean those 10 minutes were equal. You see, most of the things that I've developed to help people, the reason I can help so many people is I work on non-time, not scheduled time. So like my private group on Mondays. So I'm explaining it. So it's my private, everybody has one. I love her. All right, here we go. My non-time, when I set up, because I have thousands of people in my private networking group with one-on-one access to me. I give everyone my cell phone number, everyone my email address. People are like, how do you do that? Because I'm working on non-time. What does that mean? I don't tell you what time on Monday I'm going to meet you until the week before. Because if I have to miss my son's football game because I have a one-on-one private networking group coaching people because I promise to be there at that time every single Monday, that's expensive. But if I tell you, hey, I promise I'll be there for a minimum of an hour every Monday and I'll let you know, now I'm working on my non-time. I'm actually making the benefit because I'm looking at it going, shit, I got nothing to do at 2 o'clock on next Monday. I got no shit. I might as well make a ton of money, help a ton of people and have fun. I'm going to schedule my group for 2 o'clock. You see how the difference of non-time and scheduled time work? So when I give you all my cell phone, what do I tell you? Don't text me because that gets difficult because people expectation wise, I say, call me and leave the message. So I'm already narrowing down the people that don't feel it's that important because if they're too afraid to, they're too afraid to talk to me, then they're going to text me. But if they're willing to call me and then leave a message, which very few people are willing to do, it's on my non-time. Cause one, I can surprise the shit out of them because ironically, sometimes people call and I have nothing to do. So I answer. And they're like, holy shit. But even more impressive is I have the messages there. And so when I'm bored shitless, I'm like, I'm going to call David. Hey, man, what's going on? Holy shit, Dave called me back. Meanwhile, all I'm doing is filling the time that I'm bored. I want something because what do I love to do? I love to make money, help people, and have fun. And so, yeah, that's what I live for. So it's like, yes, I want to have the opportunity, but I want to have it on my time, non-time, not scheduled time.
So can I just ask a follow-up?
He wants a picture.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk?
Go ahead.
Follow up and then we'll
I'll listen. Okay.
Perfect. Whatever everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David, become picture
also. Yeah, we need one group picture over there.
Yeah, we'll get it right at the end. We got two more. One quick follow-up.
Thank you.
And then one.
Thank you. Please reach out to me. Thank you. You got my number?
Where's the
Nick Mills. I don't even know.
So quick follow-up. What really helps me be more authentic and being, you know, staring straight into the camera as opposed to staring somewhere else is to visualize the person watching the content behind the camera.
Sure.
And so that really helps me kind of feel more confident.
That's a frequency thing.
Visualizing this person. Yes. And as you said, it's a relationship with posting on social media is a form of a relationship with the person who's watching. The question is, how do you measure that as somebody who's trying to be authentic as the creator while just seeing the number of likes, the number of follows?
Yeah, no.
So
the only way you can measure it is the amount of intentional time that you spend capturing, modifying, amplifying, and perpetuating. So when you start looking at feedback, especially with the 7.6 billion people that are on social media, for example, just because one of my videos with Dr. J has 4.8 million followers, that doesn't mean anything to me. It's the what amount of time have I utilized to capture my essence, modify my essence that is aligned with the frequency of each of the different platforms and then amplify it by my essence, not by the response to my essence. You see, my essence is what, and the reason you guys are here. You're here because we're on the same frequency. You know, and I know this to be true. I can stand on a stage and I could speak as if I'm Einstein, that type of brilliance. And 10% of the people in that room will say, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. In fact, Einstein felt that the majority of the physics community laughed, scoffed, and made fun of him for years, and then they gave him the Nobel Prize.
Right.
So I also know this to be about frequency, that if I'm in a group of people, I can stand on the stage for 20 minutes, say one word, the, for 20 minutes, 10% of the people would come up to me and say, that was amazing. The way that you showed consistency and repetitiveness and discipline, it was life-changing, man. Why? Because it's frequency-based. So what I'm saying is, forget everybody there. Realize that the people that don't like you are protecting you from more people that aren't going to like you. And so when I had my first book review from Goodreads, my very first book, this lady shit on me so hard, called me an idiot because I said that I'd done research and you could speak to water and change the molecular structure of water by speaking to it.
Because
you're on my frequency.
I cover my
water. So I freaked out, being like you are, worrying about people's feedback. And I'm like, nobody's going to buy my book. The number one Goodreads editors called me an idiot, told you not to buy my book. You know what happened? You know what happened? The people that believed her, that you can't talk to water and change the molecule, they didn't buy my book. So I had nobody out there saying this book sucks because he thinks you can change water. And then everybody that may be on the fence or didn't know who I was were like, yes, I got to buy this guy's book. He believes what I believe. He's on my frequency. And it like tripled the amount of sales because I got the worst review as my first review on Goodreads. 1 star. Then I got a whole bunch of 5 stars.